Parshas Nitzavim. Parshas Nitzavim. We're going to start off with a couple little ramazim, a couple little hints to go into some things, and then afterward maybe we'll connect it all back. I don't know how we're going to do this exactly, but let's go. Atem Nitzavim Ayom Kulcham Lifnei Adonai Eloheichem. You guys are standing today, all of you, in front of Hashem your God. Rosheichem, Shifteichem, Ziknechem, Veshotreichem, Kol Ish Yisrael, your heads, the heads of state, your Shvatim, your elders, your officers, every man of Bnei Yisrael is standing here and is standing again and taking care of everything. Now, why are you standing here? In other words, where do we get this chus to be able to stand up and to be able to have all this stuff happen to us? Where do we get that chus? Where do we get that merit, I should call it, to be able to stand up in front of God and to be able to stand there and to all be considered kulcham lifnei Adonai Eloheichem, to all be, all of you, standing in front of Hashem your God? That's a tremendous chus. That's a tremendous amount of stuff that we have to be able to stand up like that. Where do we get that from? Chus avos. It has to be chus avos, right? So if you take the avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and I'm going to say something very strange, but I'm going to explain why we say it in such a strange way. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, last letter of Avram's name is?
Man.
Last letter of Yitzchak's name is? Last letter of Yaakov's name is? Bez. We have Kuf, Mem, and Bez. It's all together the gematria of? 142. 142 is the gematria of Nitzav. Nitzav, standing, right? Now that's cute. We got Sophie Tavis. We got Nitzav standing for us. Okay, but the word is Nitzavim, right? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, when we say them in benching, right? We say, Harach, Amoni, Varech, etc. And then everybody goes quiet for a little bit. Then we all say out loud, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. And then what do we say after that?
Bakol
Mikol Kol. Paul, do you mind translating that for me?
No.
Let's just say, well, I'm sitting there and I've got a lot of Avram people at my table. And I decide, you know, I'm going to say out, I'm going to say benching out loud, and I'm going to say it in English for everybody. So I'm just going to translate it for you. Avraham, Abraham, Yitzchak, Isaac, Yaakov, Jacob, in everything from everything, everything. Does that make sense to you? Psukim. What psukim?
Avram was blessed by Kol.
Avram, Hashem Berachas, Avram Bakol. So Bakol is used by Avram Avinu. Yitzchak is? Ba'uchal Mikol, says Yitzchak. I will be able to overcome anything. I'll be able to overcome anything. And he said the word Mikol about Yitzchak. Yaakov is Yesh Li Kol. I got everything, buddy. When Esav came along and said, Yesh Li Rav, Achi, my brother, I've got a lot. Yaakov comes along and says, Yesh Li Kol. Oh yeah, I'll one up you. I got everything. It's like, ooh, sorry. He is knocked down a little bit. What we're saying with Bakol Mikol Kol is we're trying to say, let's give ourselves the brachas that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov got, which was Bakol, Mikol, and Kol, meaning understanding that everything that God gives to us is for a reason. Everything that God gives to us is for a reason. The Avos were perfect at that, and they understood that. And you know what happens when the Avos understand something like that? You know how like DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, I want to see the report on it. You know, it like goes in strands. It goes in these double helix strands all the way through. And then when kids are born, the helix strands split off into two different parts, and they go into two different parts. And you have one helix strand, a double helix strand coming from this way, and one helix strand coming from that way. And they go together, and they form a brand new kid with a whole new thing of DNA. Meaning, sometimes the kid is going to have the mother's eyes, the father's nose, the mother's mouth, the father's teeth, then the mother's ears, then the father's hair, and everything like that. And then all of a sudden, like, some weird guy's back for some reason, you know, and there's something like whatever, but there's going to be a connection between the mother and the father going together to bring the DNA and bring everything together. And physically, the guy looks like the father and the mother. They connect with one another, but it's not just physical. Spiritual thing also. You can spiritually and give an inheritance to your kids before they're even born. Meaning, mother's got to be really, really careful when she's pregnant. They can't do stupid things. Rav Scheinberg has this whole thing, Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, he's quoted as saying, although I've never heard him directly say it, that a pregnant woman should not go to the zoo when she's pregnant. Why? Because she's going to be looking at monkeys. So even though obviously she's looking and she's seeing these monkeys and she's going to be looking at elephants and everything like that, that impression goes into the kid, and the kid already has an animalistic nature inside him. She's got to be so careful about everything she sees. I have a story with my wife that when we went to the zoo once when she was pregnant, and I heard from about Rav Scheinberg. Rav Scheinberg says you shouldn't go. I asked from two different people, Rav Kirshenbaum in Eretz Yisrael, he's a posek in Eretz Yisrael, Ramo Polin, and then Rabbi Cohn, Rabbi Zev Cohn from Yeshur, and I asked them both, have you ever heard of this, that, you know, you can't go to the zoo when you're pregnant, because I really want to go to the zoo. I'm a zoo freak. Any zoo that I can find, I go to. I'm a very big zoo freak. Ask my wife, she hates me. But either way, I dragged her with me, and we all went to the zoo, and we went by the old Lincoln Park Zoo where the gorillas were, and it was like a ghetto thing. You know, it was like grass, it was like straw on the ground, and like you felt bad. It felt like they were living in like 1972. And like you could see like the disco ball on top and everything. It was just like this disgusting place, and there was nothing fun. You know, they changed the whole thing lately, whatever. Either way, there was this thing that looked absolutely disgusting. So we were walking by, and I was like all the way in the front. I'm like checking out the gorillas. Like, I love watching this stuff and everything. My wife is right behind me, standing right by the glass itself, like right up against the glass. All of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see there's one gorilla sitting down, like chewing a piece of straw, you know, just chilling out, chewing a piece of straw. There's another gorilla all the way in the back. All of a sudden, he gets up. I don't know if it's a he or she, I didn't check, but it's a he or she. Got up, ran as fast as he could up to the glass right where my wife was standing. My wife didn't see him at all, and went boom against the glass, right up against the glass. She freaked out, and I'm standing there, and it was the funniest thing in the world, because you look at the other gorilla. Now, I'll tell you why it was funny. I'm like standing like, oh my gosh, that's it. And then you look at the gorilla that was sitting down, the other gorilla did this motion. Did that. Like, say to the other one, you're such an animal. You can imagine, like one gorilla saying to the other. But either way, I always thought that was retribution for going when she was pregnant. But thank God the kid wasn't a monkey. She was Devorah, my oldest. She's five. She's tall. She's still good. As of right now, she's not a girl. Everything's, yeah, I mean, she's not even so black. She's not a black hair. She doesn't have black hair. She's not hairy or all, you know, whatever. It depends. But either way, you get this idea of when you do something, all of a sudden you can give this inheritance to your kids of something spiritual, which the kids all of a sudden go up or can move themselves up or bring themselves down because of it. If you do certain mitzvos, the kids get that mitzvah ingrained inside them. And if you do certain averos, then the kid gets those averos ingrained inside them. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because they were such great people, ingrained inside every single one of their kids the ability to do good. Not only that, Avram gave us Mesiras Nefesh, and he gave us Chesed, and he gave stuff like that. Yitzchak was able to give us Din. Yaakov gave us the truth, Emes, and the ability to learn Torah. Every single one of them had a certain thing that they tried to ingrain inside us. So, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What letters were we looking at again? Which letters? The last letters, right? Why the last letters? Because in the end of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, what comes out from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov is going to be the abilities of Bakol, Mikol, and Kol. Bakol, Mikol, Kol is the gematria of 192. 192 is a gematria of Nitzavim. Zetatem Nitzavim Ayom. Kuchen Lifnei Adonai Lechem. How? Because Chus Avos. Why Chus Avos? Because the Avos brought within you Bakol Mikol Kol to accept what God gives you, to be happy with everything that God gives you, and thus you're standing in front of God, all of you, in front of God straight, without any problem whatsoever. Atem, by the way, just to add on a little bit, Atem is also, switch around the letters, what do you come out with? I don't know why in the world people, this is the fourth time that I've done this today, and everybody keeps saying, yeah, it's MS, of course. You just switch the M and the T, but everybody always says Tome first. So you're wrong, because you go backward. Oh, Tome. It's the first way. That's very, I love you, Paul. So either way, so MS is supposed to be the word. You come out, you take out Atem, you switch it around, and you make it into MS. You make it into MS. What's MS? MS is the meat of who? Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu also is well known for what? What midah also was he known for? Not only MS, but also Torah, right? Aleph was the first letter of the Torah that was given to us. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, which is the first word of Torah that we ever got at Har Sinai with the Aseres Adibros. It's Anochi. First word in the Mishnayis in Brachos. And when we start off the real Mishnayis, which is Brachos, even though it doesn't start off that, is Me'em Asai. Mishnayis itself is a Mem itself. The first word of the Gemara is Tana, Pecha Koi. Where's Tana coming from? That he starts off with Me'emasai, which is a tough. Aleph, Mem, and Tuf is MS, is the Torah of Torah Shebichsav, then the Mishnayis, and the Torah Shebal Peh of Gemara, to bring it all together and to say this chus of the MS of Yaakov Avinu, not only the MS, the Atem, which is the MS of Yaakov Avinu, as well as the ability for us to learn Torah, is what lets us stand, Kuchem Lefnei Hashem Elokeichem, to stand around forever. Yeah.
Why'd you choose the MS above the Tame?
Instead of Tame?
Yeah.
You're right. Just Tommy's a bad word. word. Aside from the fact that it's not even spelled that way. But, I mean, aside from that, it's not even a word. You know, so it's true, but MS is even better, right? Because it stands for Yaakov, and Yaakov is the guy who has Torah, and it all works out better this way. So look, it all works out. It all comes out good. All right, anyway. Is there anybody missing over here? I'm just going to quote you down. Just pay attention over here. We got Rosheichem, Shivteichem, Ziknechem, the Zakenim, the Shvatim, the Shotreichem, the officers, Kol Yishisro, every Jewish man. Tapchem, your babies, Nesheichem, your woman, Gircha, Asher, Bekerav, Machanecha, your Gerim that are within your camp, from the wood choppers till the water carriers. There's a group of people here that's missing.
It's the
famous group of people. What? Say that louder.
Erev Rav.
Erev Rav. Where are they? Where are they over here? Yamali says, you know what happened to them?
They can't stand.
Gone. They all died. Every single one of them. It does mention Gircha Shebekar Machanecha, the Gerim that are within your camp. But the Erev Rav were never within the camp. They always stood outside the clouds themselves. So if they did that, they were completely out. So what happened to them? Says in Yom Lois, they all died. Kosana Shachal Torah, they all died. Every single person died. So let's go all the way back. Medrash. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, look, the Erev Rav are following me home, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Can I keep them for myself? Can I have the Erev Rav and join them up? Look, we're going to have a ton of people. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, look, I don't think it's such a good idea, but if you really want to, then go ahead. Moshe Rabbeinu says, all right, I'm going for it. And he takes them in, and every single sin that they do in the Midbar has to do with Erev Rav. They screwed up one time after the other, just keep messing up. They did the Egel Azov, they kept complaining. Every single time, it's like, Erev Rav again. It's the it's always the Erev Rav. And then all of a sudden, you come to the end of the 40 years, Erev Rav are gone. So doesn't that look like Moshe Rabbeinu is dead wrong? Shouldn't have taken them in the first place. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them not to take them in the first place. How in the world did he argue with Hashem and say, all right, I'm taking them anyway? What kind of an answer is that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should I keep them? Don't. But if you want to, go ahead. Tell me yes or no. This is not a maybe question. This is not the type of answer that I want to hear. Tell me yes or no. What do you want? Do you want me to keep these people for ourselves or no? Which one is it? What do you want me to have? Do you want me to keep them or no? Unbelievable answer. Unbelievable answer. You have two different ways of learning from something. You have two different ways of learning. So there's a way of just isolating yourself completely. Just taking yourself away from everything else there is out there, putting yourself in one isolated spot, not letting anyone inside. Mea Sharim, for example. Completely isolating yourself, putting yourself away from everything else in the entire world, not letting any outside influences in. You live in Mea Sharim, it's literally a fortress, by the way. Literally, Mea Sharim itself is a fortress. There's only a couple gates. When it was first made, they wouldn't allow anybody inside that wasn't on their level. They refuse. They said, don't get in here. We don't want you inside here. They refused to let anybody in, and they wouldn't even go out. They stayed within their walls, and there are people nowadays in Mea Sharim that don't leave that area, that will not leave that area. Why? Because they don't want to have the outside influences. No radio, no TV, no anything, no billboards, no bars, no anything. There's keeps everything there. Out, and thus...
There's a billboard. It says women's chesneas.
Anyway, so you have nothing there. No outside influences, nothing influencing you to do anything else. That's one way of doing it. And look, I can tell you straight from my Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael for 3.5 years from Rav Asher Arieli. Rav Asher Arieli had a shir in the mirror that was 350 people big. So I was there when somebody asked... through what schus, this question has been asked to him many times before, but everybody asks this question. They say, through what schus did Rebbe have to have such a big shir? It's 350 people, sometimes there's 400. When you're standing there, you have to stand like all bunched together, you can't move and everything. So they ask him, what schus do you have to give such a huge shir, for it to be the most popular shir in all Yerushalayim? What did you do to deserve this? So Rav Asher said, I have no idea, because he's still like an unknown. He's not going to be out like, well, you know, it's my speaking ability. He's not going to say anything like that. He said, you know, he just said, I have absolutely no idea, but maybe it's because I've never, ever been on Rehov Yafo. Now, I know not everybody here has been to Israel, but Rehov Yafo is where town is.
Yeah.
It's where the Shuk is, where now the Tachan Merkazit is. Anything that you can think of in which you would think like, oh, Tahor and then Tameh. There's sort of like that level of just like, there's pure Tahara and then it's sort of like whatever. Yeah, there's some great shoe stores there. That's all you know. So the fact is, it's a bad place. And if you go there, people have no shame. They don't care. They don't realize that they're not on the beach. They forget sometimes, and they just completely forget, and they don't realize, like, oh, ma'am, you were supposed to get dressed when you got up this morning. That was, oh, I forgot. Completely forgot. Happens once in a while. And what it is is something a little tiny bit off. Says Rav Asher, it's a possibility that that's the reason why it was Zocha. I've never been on that street. Why? I've always stayed on that side. There's somebody who improves himself in the system. The only problem with this kind of a system is that there are times when somebody goes out of the system and all of a sudden everything hits you all at once. You see the bright lights, the flashing, you get yourself into Times Square. You're like, you're living in a ghetto your entire life. You're living inside this whole thing your entire life. You've never seen anything. All of a sudden you see a massive, giant, 55,000 inch screen TV. You go crazy. You'll stare at it for years. You won't be able to stop. All of a sudden you just flip out completely. It's just like you walk out there, you walk outside for 1 second, it's like, forget about this. You throw it right off and it's just, forget it, I'm out. Because when you get yourself out of the shelter, can't do it anymore. For example, you're in Skokie Yeshiva right now. It's very easy for you right now to not watch TV. Very, very easy for you. But if you were at home right now, would you be able to stop yourself from watching TV? You wouldn't be able to stop yourself. Because you're sheltering yourself. You're putting yourself in a position where, and that's a good thing, you're putting yourself in a position where you can't do that. Unless you have a little watchman, which is not good in a dorm. But if you do, then that wouldn't be sheltering yourself. You try to keep yourself away from those things by sheltering yourself, and you won't get anything in. The other way of doing it is by allowing those bad influences in, by allowing those bad elements in, understanding that I might have to go down a little bit, but then improving on yourself because of it. Because you look at how bad this guy is, and you go up because of it, and you say, well, I don't want to be like that guy. You compare like that guy. Skokie versus Hell, so it's very cute. Very cute. But you see, and you say, like, look, those guys are the bad guys. I don't want to be like them. I want to be like those guys. I want to be like the good base medrash guys. Look at that guy. I want to be like him. Not like him. Like him. I want to be like that guy over there. You know, you look at those guys, and you say, like, you know, I want to be like that.
I hear
it. And there are certain people.
I understand.
The idea was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu paskined the first way, that he told Moshe Rabbeinu, there is a way, and the best way is to get rid of all outside influences. Let Bnei Yisrael be by themselves, and everything will be great. They'll have no outside influences, nothing will influence them to do bad, nothing bad will happen. But he said, but if you want, there's a tremendous amount of schar in going out and challenging yourself. Adam Rishon's first choice was to do that. Do you want to live as a Nebuch, living in Olam Haba, getting free gifts the entire time? Or do you want to actually work for your money? You want to work for your food and get everything for work by doing something about it. And Moshe Rabbeinu chose like Adam Rishon, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the choice. He said, the best choice is for you guys to just stay by yourselves without any problems. But Moshe Rabbeinu was told, if you want, you can get the Erev Rav. Now there is a possibility that everything's going to get messed up, but you guys can improve yourselves because of it. And you can raise yourselves in levels because you'll realize we don't want to be like that guy. We don't want to be like those Erev Rav. We don't want to be like those 1.6 million Erev Rav according to Rabbi Kiva and the Mechilta that are all out there and doing all those bad things. I want to be different from them. I'm changing myself. I'm going to be different from all those people. So says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I allow you to do that. You can do that. And what happened at the very end? Atem nitzavim ayom kulchem, all of you, lifnei Adonai Eloheichem. Not just some of you, not most of Bnei Yisrael, every single person there is lifnei Adonai Eloheichem. It's in front of God, straight up in front of Hashem, no problems. All the Erev Rav are gone. All the bad elements are gone. Anybody that needed to be killed because they were mixing in with the Erev Rav, gone. They're all gone. That's a Chicago accent for you. Completely out of there. All that's left is the kulchem lifnei Adonai Eloheichem. You only get those guys that are all in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All right, that's that. Now, we're going to mention a couple other things over here. Just a quick question. How did we accept Garen? We know that in the Midbar, Bnei Yisrael weren't able to do the Bris Milah. They weren't able to give themselves Bris Milah. The only people that did were Shevet Levi. Who here is from Shevet Levi? Way to go, guys. Way to go. Shevet Levi is the only guys that actually did it. You guys in Shevet Levi were the only ones that did it. Everyone else in Bnei Yisrael didn't. Why? Because of the Suffolk Sakana.
And the water theory, guys.
Because of the Gemara that says that there's, in order for the Bris Milah to happen and for there not to be a Sakana, you need the Ruach Tzvonis, this northern wind. But the problem with the northern wind is that it blows away clouds. So since they were surrounded by the Anan HaKavod, you couldn't have the Ruach Tzvonis. tzvonis. If you didn't have the royal tzvonis, you weren't able to give a bris milah. It was a suffix sakana if the person would die after getting the bris milah. If that was true. Don't think of them as magical clouds. Think of them as regular clouds that were given extra abilities by Kadosh Baruch Hu.
Okay, so they got the ability to let wind through.
Nope. There still are natural properties. Natural properties are winds.
Blocking arrows.
Yoshua had to give them after they already came around, because then you have to give bris milah to everybody. And Perek Gimel and Yoshua does say that Yoshua was commanded to go give everybody a bris milah. The reason why is because they weren't giving them throughout the Midbar. The question is, wait a second, how does a ger become a ger? Milah and tefillah, right? So tefillah is already a question. Where do they do tefillah? It's in the middle of the desert. So they say, okay, Be'er Miriam, even though it was a very thin river, but still you could jump inside and it was very, very deep. So you never want to let your kids play around the river. But either way, there was the Be'er Miriam itself. You could dip inside. There was a good mikvah. But regarding bris milah, how in the world were they able to do a bris milah? How could they do it? How were they able to? It's an unbelievable din. The Achiezer says there's a nafkamina lahalacha nowadays regarding this whole thing. He says, the chai bahem, the only reason why we're not allowed to do something that's a suffix sakana, that you might die doing, you can't do it, because it's a pasuk that says, v'chai bahem, live with them. Meaning, do mitzvos and live with those mitzvos. Don't do anything wrong. You can live with them, and you can't die by them. Meaning, if you do a mitzvah, and it might kill you, you don't have to do the mitzvah. That's where the pasuk comes from. Does v'chai bahem apply by goyim?
No.
Pasuk doesn't apply to goyim. So if a goy wants to become a Jew, and he says, wait a second, but it's a sakana. I might die if I give myself a bris milah. That's okay. We're fine with that. Because, wait, v'chai bahem doesn't apply by them. If they want to put themselves into a suffix sakana, they can. The Levium put themselves inside it. B'nai Yisrael were not commanded to put themselves inside it. These people were allowed to. To which you come up with a question. There is a guy in Klal Yisrael that never got a bris milah, but should have, but didn't, because it was a suffix sakana. Who? Yitzchak's kid. Esav. It's good that we all know Esav. But Esav came along, never got a bris milah. Why? He was kulu admoni, all red. They thought he was going to die. If they cut him, they thought he was going to bleed tremendously, and he was going to die. He was too full of blood. So they waited and waited and waited, until they realized, no, this guy's just a red kid. So then they went up to Esav and they said, Esav, do you want the bris milah? And he said, no. And he never got a bris milah. Esav never got a bris milah. So I don't understand. If it's a suffix sakana, and he's a goy, because Esav was not commanded necessarily in the bris milah. He's a goy. So then, the chai bahem, or Yitzchak himself, but if so, the chai bahem shouldn't apply by him. So who cares? If he dies, he dies. What difference does it make?
If he got a bris, he would have been... Who cares? He didn't yet.
He didn't yet. So if he didn't get it yet, no problem. Think about it. There's no problem. So when it comes to all this, you can answer very simply. No. A person can choose to do it for himself. Yitzchak couldn't make that decision for Esav. Yitzchak can't make a decision to possibly kill Esav. Esav can make the decision for himself. But Yitzchak wasn't able to do it for himself, so they waited for Esav to get older. When he got older, they said to him, do you want the suffix sakana? Esav said, no. I don't want to. And he wasn't wrong. There was no isser in doing such a thing. It's like B'nai Yisrael in the Midbar.
He said, okay, we don't have to. Yitzchak wasn't really a Jew either. There weren't Jews back then.
No, but he did have the bris milah. And that's okay. He wanted to bring the bris milah into Esav himself.
I have a question. What about by the Akedah? Did Yitzchak want to be a carbon?
Commanded by God, as opposed to the bris milah, which is not commanded to.
Wait, hold a second. Was he commanded? Yitzchak was commanded.
Avram Avinu was commanded to sacrifice.
Right. Was Yitzchak commanded to?
What's his name? He was bound.
Along with it.
Yeah, he was bound. Yeah.
Wasn't his big need Kibbutz Avim? Remember Kibbutz?
Esav. Yeah.
Right. So obviously Yitzchak was rooting for him to go with the milah.
Wait until Parshas told us. There's a reason why. Kibbutz Avim, the way we're thinking about it, is not the same thing that. It's not the same thing as the actual answer. So we got to wait for Parshas Toldos for that. It's too long of an answer. The Achiezer paskins because of that. If there's a goy who ends up having two kids, two brothers of his, that end up dying from a bris milah, and now he wants to become a Jew and he wants to get a bris milah, but he says, we have a chazakah. The first kid died, the second kid died, now I'm the third kid. I'm going to die. I don't want to get a bris milah. We paskin by Jews that the third kid doesn't get a bris milah. So what about in this case? The Achiezer says, based on this, give him a bris milah anyway. cut it off anyway. Oh, but it's going to be a sakana. He doesn't have a chaybahem. He's a guy. So if he doesn't have the assay of the chaybahem, then he has a tziboy to give himself a bris milah. And if he doesn't, okay, he can't be Jewish. It's not a bad thing. He can still be a ger tosha, but he's not going to be Jewish. He's not going to be considered a Jew. Okay, let's stop with that. Let's go on to something a lot more cooler. V'hanachri. I love this one. Anybody look at the pasuk Chaf Aleph? V'amar Ador Achron B'neichem Asher Kimu Achareichem. The next generation, the last generation, your sons that come up after you. V'hanachri. And the goy, Asher Yavo Meretz Rechoka, that comes from a faraway land. V'ro'z Makos Aris. That he is going to see the plagues of this land, and the bad things that happen to it, that God made it go bad. All the bad things that happen inside it. Who's this guy?
Maybe it's
I saw this. I wouldn't say it if I didn't see it. However, I don't have it written down where I saw it. I just wrote Shamati in my notebook. I don't know where I got it from. A guy by the name of Mark Twain. Mark Twain went to Israel around the turn of the century, around the 1900s. Came inside, or 1800s, late 1800s. Went inside and he saw, he's never seen such a disgusting land. Sand everywhere, totally destroyed, completely annihilated, all gone. Everything's completely gone, destroyed. There's nothing in there. You look at Eretz Yisrael now, there's like one little area that's like desert. Everything else is gorgeous. There's grasses all over the place, farmland everywhere. Everything looks good, everything's fine. When Mark Twain went inside there, it looked absolutely disgusting. Why? Because all the curses that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought inside it at the times when Jews were not inside the land of Eretz Yisrael. You know what Mark Twain's real name was? Samuel Clemens. Clemens is the same gematria as Vahanachri.
It's what?
Cute, right? You like that. Clemens. Kuf Lamed Mem Nun Samet. It's the same gematria as Vahanachri. It's a remes. It's
we're
a cute
really bored.
Board. I know. I said it. Wrote Shemati. All right, anyway, I want to go into something else. But turn back. Turn a little bit further. So Hashem's going to knock them off from the ground. With anger and anger and anger big. Just three different types of anger. He's going to throw them to another land like this day. Bayashlichem is weird because it's got a big lamed. Anybody who's about Kore, you read it and you just see this big lamed in the middle of nowhere. Sit there and you're like, what's up with the big lamed? Whenever there's a big letter or a small letter or something like that, there's always a reason for it. You got to ask yourself, so what's with the big lamed? Why lamed? Why is the lamed in the middle of Bayashlichem gone like that? So, unbelievable Refersh. Refersh says, you know why we still exist? Because we're still learning Torah. Anybody who doesn't learn Torah, they end up getting destroyed. I mean, nowadays, you see, with a 50% intermarriage rate, we're losing so many people. We're losing a ton. We're losing an absolute ton. Our census went down. We had a census in 1985 there were altogether 20 million Jews in the world. There's 23 million Jews in the world. In 1995, it was 18 million. That's how sad it is. And we still have the Hasidim. So there's still 14 kids per family. And still, we lost out on it from all that. It still went down. It's awesome. Unbelievable how it kept going down. Why? What in the world? Where did that come from? The idea is, the Ashlichem is, you know why you still exist? Because of learning Torah. The Yeshchem, without that Lamed, is the Yeshchem. Why? Because of the Lamed. Because of the Limud. Pasuk Chof Zayin. Vayeshchem, you exist. Yesh lachem, there is for you. You exist. Why? Because the lamed, because the limud Torah. The only reason why you still exist is because of that limud Torah. But more than that, Vayashchem is set down by the Chidah. Same gematria as Esav. You know why same gematria as Esav? It's the same gematria as Esav because it's trying to tell you that at the end of times, when we say Hakol Kol Yaakov Yadayim Dei Esav, that Esav is one that's going to be the doing one. But Esav is going to return to us. He's going to be the Chazir. He's called the Chazir. He's known as the pig. Chazir is called Chazir as pig because it's going to be Chazor. It's going to return to us lost at level. That Edom is going to turn its back on everything in the world and they're going to try to become Jewish. Esav is going to try to eat from Livyasan, the famous Livyasan that we're going to have Shechted. He's going to try to bring himself about into Chal Yisrael and try to bring himself in. All of Esav is going to do that. All of Edom is going to want to come back to us. And that's Vayeshchem, the Lamed. Vayeshchem is the gematria of Esav itself. And you know what the Lamed is? I can't do this without a piece of paper, but I want to do it with a piece of paper that doesn't have anything else on it. Can you give me that piece of paper that already has drawing on it? Anybody got a pen on them? Oh, I got one. Forget it. Ready? I know this is going to look a little bit weird, but there's two different types of lamids. Two different types of lamids. One lamid goes like this. Right? One lamid goes like that. The other lamid goes like this. It goes a little bit up like that, and then it bends over like that.
It's Olivia.
Right? You know what that is? Aside from Livyasan. You know what that is? Look at it very, very quick. You think he goes like that and everything. You know what this refers to? I'm going to put in one line. Just on the left side.
Livyasan. It's a big whale
fish thing.
Right?
Shit,
camel.
You know what that looks like?
I got a
camel. What if I write south and north?
Dakota.
Close enough.
Some sort of land.
Desert.
Two mountains.
All right, fine. I'll write central.
America. Wow, that's crazy.
Very cute, no?
That's kind of cute.
Yeshchem is Esav.
Wow.
The Yeshchem is going to be thrown away. To where? To the Lamids. Where is the Lamids? The Lamids are America. And even if you say the first way that I heard it was like this.
That's so cool.
Like this itself.
That's
if you do
crazy.
The regular Lamid like that, the regular Lamid like that, you know what that's like? It's the entire USA with Alaska. So I don't know if there are any Jews in Alaska. It comes out that way. That's a cute one. But this one itself is supposed to be referred to just the going all the way to America. It's a pure thing.
Cool. I don't know where he comes from.
What?
What are you?
Oh, it's just America, just the USA. Itself. Anyway, that's the idea. And by the way, oh, and I forgot to say this also, the Yashkin, the Yeshven, Vav Yud Shin Chof Mem, 376, the same gematria as K-America.
That's crazy.
So I got to add in my own little gematria for that, you know, to get it in all over there. Okay, whatever. I'm going to tell you guys over on Ban, because I only have like 2 minutes. I'm going to say over in 2 minutes. Oh, man, we have Loba Shamayimi and Kerv Yelech. I'll tell you over a quick story. Kov Yelech Lamos, at the very end in Vayelech, I have three great verses that I wanted to say over. I'm really sorry. But Yudalit, Pasuk Yudalit, it says the following. Pasuk Yudalit, it says, you're going to die. Go call Yoshua, bring him into the Olmoid. I'm going to command him, I'm going to tell him everything. Okay, the Gross is an unreal vort. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu took Yoshua, brought Yoshua up to the Olmoid. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared in the cloud to Yoshua, and then afterward Yoshua came back, turned back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, so what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell you? Yoshua turned back to him and said, all these years that I was the Talmud and you were the Rebbe, did I ever ask you what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to you?
Wow.
Now what do you think when you first hear that? That's the craziest chutzpah I've ever heard before in my life. If anything, if Moshe was smart, he would take a gun and shoot him. Because that was like the craziest chutzpah you can ever imagine. And Moshe, well, what's he going to say back? Like, okay, but I'm the Rebbe. Get out of here. Like, well, what's wrong with you? How could you say so to them? The Medrash is a plia. It's called a Medrash plia. Unbelievably off. Doesn't make any sense. The Gra explains it unbelievably well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him in a cloud and gave him an avua. Ko amaro Moshe. This is what you should say to Moshe. All these years that I was the Talmud and you were the Rebbe, did I ever ask you what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to you? Go back and tell that to Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu had a major problem. He wanted to go inside Eretz Yisrael so badly. He said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let me go in as a Talmud. Let me go in under Yoshua. Let Yoshua be the leader. He'll lead them into Eretz Yisrael, and I'll go down. I'll bring myself down, and I'll just be like a regular guy. I'll just walk inside, and I'll just be a regular guy going inside Eretz Yisrael. I won't do anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said he won't be able to take it. Moshe Rabbeinu said, try me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay. And he gave him this test. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up to him and said, knew what HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? And Yoshua told him that back. He knew. He was right. There's nothing I can do about it. I can't do anything about it. I have the desire to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not out of gaiva, chas v'shalom. Moshe Rabbeinu was the biggest donav you can ever imagine. It wasn't out of gaiva, I want to be the one to talk to God. It's that he had the taiva to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to have the ruchnius experience of speaking with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He couldn't take that somebody else was doing it instead of him. He got so upset about it when he heard that Yoshua was there and Yoshua told him that back. He said, Shoin, you're right. 100% right. I can't go inside Eretz Yisrael as a Talmud. I can't be the Talmud to you. I can't do it. And again, Korvi Yumech Alamus. Only three times in the entire Torah does it say the word Kirva Yamus. Korvi Yumech Alamus. Three times. Where? Moshe Rabbeinu, Yaakov Avinu, and David HaMelech. Those three, and only by those three does it say it. Why? Because it's such a weird lashon. Korvi Yumech Alamus. Your days are coming close to die. Is anybody here, like right before Shkia, like the day going like, aha, I'm dying? Nobody hears that. Never happens. And if you do hear it, go see a doctor right away. It's not happening. It's the wrong thing to hear. But I think Kovi Yamechalamus, your days are coming close to dying? What in the world is that referring to? What does that mean? You know what Kovi Yamechalamus means? Your days on earth are coming close to being gone. There's not going to be any more days on earth. You're not going to be around on earth anymore. You won't be around for anything here. You're not going to be around. But does that mean you're going to die? Not necessarily. David HaMelech, Yaakov Avinu, and Moshe Avinu have one thing in common. Yaakov Avinu, Gemara and Tainus and Daf Dalet. Yaakov Avinu, Lomes. Yaakov Avinu never died. The Gemara says that he asked back, one of the Amoraim said to the other Amora, aye, but it says that he was embalmed. I'm just darshaning a pasuk. And he darshans out the pasuk. He says, darshans out the pasuk over there. It's unbelievable to understand, but Yaakov Avinu Lomes. It's a chesam sofer on it. If you guys want it, whatever. Maybe we'll go to it in Parshas Vayechi. That's number one. Moshe Rabbeinu. There's a medrash in Devarim Rabbah and Perek Beis. Moshe Omid Meshamish Bamarim. Moshe is standing and serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu up in heaven, meaning he's standing. He's still around and serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu as if he was still alive up in Shemayim. Meaning fully alive. Hold on. How did he get killed? What happened? How does it say by Yom HaShem Moshe? Everybody asks that question, and again, comes into one of those sodas to Kavorts, but so divorced. Yeah?
So how does he get reincarnated?
Gilgul. Don't ask about the Gilgul. Maybe once we do Shara Gilgulim, when you come back to me and I'm 40 and you're 40, then we'll come back to it, we'll do the entire thing, I'll go through Gilgulim, we'll go through the entire thing, and I'll just... once I turn, like, I'm going to get that bright shine on my face, you know, I'm just going to sit there, and then maybe we'll understand those Gilgulim. Until then, no clue. I don't know. I don't know. No, don't ask me. That's number two. Number three is David HaMelech. David HaMelech, we know. We sing it every time there's a wedding. David HaMelech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam. I got the cue. David HaMelech, Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam. And there's this Maisa that goes with this. I'm not going to be able to say the Maisa is too long, but maybe if we're lucky, I'll be able to say it next week or whenever we get to Parsha Hazinu. Unreal story of what happened with David HaMelech and his kever. What's with David HaMelech's kever when the Arabs found his kever? But that's not what I'm fine. We'll skip that for next time. But regardless, you know what the pshat is behind this? David Melech is Moshe Rabbeinu. Yisrael is Yaakov. Archai v'kayim. That they're chai v'kayim. They're living. It's not like they're dead. Kov yom mechalamus. Their days on this earth are gone. Those have died. But they themselves, there's no such thing as death by the tzaddikim. They don't have death. There's no such thing by them. We have to understand that. We have to understand what that means. How are they gugulim? I don't know. I can't tell you. All I'm telling you is, this is a vort from not only Miyam Loez, the Paris Yosef quotes it down. They quote it down in all the different Likutim Svarim also. But it's Kovi Yom Acholomus. These three are the people that are Dov Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim. When you say it, there's another meaning to it. Tzadikim are beyond us. Beyond us. They don't have regular death. It's a different type. It's a totally different type. We're going to end with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.